Mr. Mola?
Good morning.
Morning.
Your Honors, and just, I just ask the court to bear with me. I've written many briefs on appeal and writs. This is actually my first oral argument in an appellate court, so just pardon the amateur presentation that I'm sure you're going to get. But normally, when I submit a brief on appeal, Your Honors, I just ask the court to, you know, take into account the arguments that I have in my brief. But I request a hearing in this case because, frankly, I've never in the 5 years that I practiced law and 2 years prior to that I was an intern with the Attorney General, I've never had a case where evidence was presented other than a judicial confession in a criminal case and no record was made of the proceedings. I asked some of the better appellate legal minds in the state if they've ever actually had a case like this, and they also told me no. And I wanted to explain to the court, and I think it's fair to the court, understand why we're even here. After Mr. Daniel Aranda was convicted in the 213th court, the presiding judge was Honorable Robert Gill. I was hired to write the appeal. I contacted Mr. Schiller and asked him if he can prepare the reporter's record, and Mr. Schiller told me there is no reporter's record. I asked him, why isn't there a reporter's record, and he couldn't tell me. He just said that he doesn't have any record of making a record. And at that point, you know, I sought outside counsel, and my conclusion was I couldn't submit an appeal because there was no reporter's record to present to the court as a statement of evidence. I looked at the clerk's record, and the clerk's record is very, very sparse. The appellant was originally indicted of attempted capital murder. Basically, under the law, parties in an attempted robbery, and he pleaded guilty to aggravated robbery and received deferred adjudication probation. He was alleged to have violated his probation, and then he had a hearing before Judge Gill. He pleaded true to the state's allegations, and then there was an actual hearing on the punishment. And that's the basis of my brief. I originally, after determining that I couldn't file an appeal in this case because there was really no record to appeal. In fact, if the court looks at the clerk's record, the only evidence that there was even a hearing on the motion to adjudicate guilt was a notation by Judge Gill that the appellant was in court for the hearing and he was represented by counsel. There's no other evidence in the record anywhere that there was a hearing or that there was counsel for the appellant other than the judgment of conviction. And I filed a petition for writ of habeas corpus under Article 1107 of the Code of Criminal Procedure alleging ineffective assistance of counsel during the probation revocation case. And in the writ, I submitted affidavits of people that were actually there because, again, I had no reporter's record to present to the court. And some time passed. Judge Gill then requested from the Probation Revocation Council that he submit an affidavit. Probation Revocation Council did not do so. Then Judge Gill signed an order to show cause, asking him to appear and explain why he never submitted an affidavit. He finally did submit an affidavit on the 11th hour, and nowhere in his affidavit, which is in the writ record, did he state why he didn't request a record, a reporter's record, or record of the proceedings to be taken. I attempted to contact counsel with no success. I couldn't get him on the phone. I sent a letter to him. I received no response. Then the state, in their response to my 1107 petition, they stated that they felt that my writ was premature, but that I should be given an out-of-time appeal. Now, I have done probably six out-of-time appeals so far, and I'm pretty well aware of the procedure for an out-of-time appeal. My client didn't request out-of-time appeal, and in the order adopting the state's recommendations, the presiding judge, now Judge Stearns, granted my client out-of-time appeal. So at that point, I really wasn't sure what to do. Now, I thought about an Anders brief. The only problem is, as the court well knows, an Anders brief is a brief filed by an attorney when he feels that any appeal would be frivolous. The problem for my client is he was ordered to proceed to an appeal. So when you're ordered to proceed to an appeal, I really didn't know how I can claim that an appeal would be frivolous. I've never dealt with a situation. So not knowing or not really sure what to do, I picked up the Texas Rule of Appellate Procedure and really started reading. Then I noticed that perhaps I can make an argument that my client received ineffective assistance of counsel at trial because his counsel did not request a record to be made. The court well knows that district courts, like the 213 district court, is a court of record. And as I laid out in my brief, the appellant has a responsibility to request a record, a reporter's record of the proceeding. The question is, if the appellant is represented by counsel, should counsel request a reporter's record? Now, I don't know why a record was not made, Your Honors. I do not know. There is nothing in the clerk's record indicating why a record was not made. My client, I've interviewed him in person. He does not know why a record wasn't made. Counsel for my client during the revocation proceeding didn't respond to my requests and inquiries. So therefore, I presented a brief to the court simply stating that my client received ineffective assistance of counsel at trial during a revocation proceeding because of the fact that his attorney did not request a record. He was denied a meaningful appeal. And I think my argument makes sense because, again, how do you appeal when there is no record? In fact, you know, when I filed the original brief, I got a letter from the clerk of this court telling me that my brief was insufficient or deficient because I did not reference the record. And then I went ahead and filed an amended brief, making more reference to the clerk's record, but apparently the young lady didn't know that there was no record made. And, you know, my argument in the brief simply states that at what point do we let trial counsel off the hook for not doing what trial counsel is supposed to do? Now, the state in their reply, and again, I'm not going to go over my brief because, you know, it's in front of the court, but the state in its reply on page 4 states that the record, however, does not support a finding of ineffective assistance. The problem is there is no record. So I don't know what record they're referencing. Again, there's only one reference to the trial counsel that he even existed in this case. And then the state also states that where a record, again, not being a record, fails to reveal counsel's reasons for the challenged conduct, this court should assume a strategic motivation when one can be imagined. The law, as this court well knows, on effective assistance of counsel is that counsel's trial strategy has to be objectively reasonable. And what that means, of course, is, for instance, we all know about the infamous case where the trial attorney was asleep during trial. That can't be considered objectively reasonable. If trial attorney conducts no voir dire, if trial attorney doesn't present any evidence, doesn't cross-examine anyone, that cannot be considered objectively reasonable. And the state says that defense counsel may have chosen not to request a record because he knew that an appeal from the adjudication was patently frivolous. The only problem is that is not defense counsel's choice to make. He did not confer with my client whether he wanted a record. He did not confer with my client whether he wanted to appeal. My belief in my dealings with defense counsel, who as one of my exhibits to the case, exhibit number 8, shows that Mr. German Baker did receive a 2-year hard suspension, is that he just didn't know what he was doing. I don't show any record of any criminal representation by Mr. Baker in Tarrant County. He was a Tarrant County attorney before the suspension, and I believe he just didn't know that he was supposed to request a record and preserve my client's appellate rights. The state then goes into some issues regarding the fact that my client pleaded true to the allegations, and he did plead true to the allegations. You know, he failed a couple of drug tests. That's sort of hard to beat on trial during a revocation case. However, the law is clear that an appellant can claim ineffective assistance of counsel during a punishment hearing. This case was a punishment hearing. Unfortunately, we'll never know what evidence was really presented other than the plea of true, whether Mr. Baker presented any evidence at all, and what that evidence entails. And at this point, you know, I just want the court to take note that the state needs to determine at some point how much slack we give to defense attorneys during trial when it comes to not doing what, frankly, is common sense. You know, courts have ruled in the state, all the appellate courts have ruled that a trial counsel's job does not end when the judgment is entered. They do have the responsibility to preserve their client's appellate rights, either by filing a notice of appeal or by withdrawing and bringing to the court's attention that the client wishes to prosecute an appeal. Mr. Baker, based on what I've seen and based on the evidence, the sparse evidence that's presented, simply walked away from the case. He disappeared. And for that reason, I believe that he did commit ineffective assistance of counsel at trial because, again, he failed to preserve my client's appellate rights. And again, you know, in concluding, I just asked the court to consider that under Strickland versus Washington, Mr. Baker's actions were not objective, or objectively reasonable, excuse me, and that but for his failure to request a record or at least tell the court that my client waives the record, my client was denied a meaningful appeal and is his constitutional right to an initial appeal, and he was denied that. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mallow. Ms. Dehoney.
Good morning. May it please the court. A number of the things that were discussed in appellant's argument are actually not before this court. This is not an evidentiary court. This court, in fact, has decided many cases that say, and so has the Court of Criminal Appeals, that say this court cannot consider documents appended to briefs. Additionally, we heard a number of things, excuse me, talking about counsel's experience, discussions with other attorneys pertaining to what is common practice or common sense to do as far as defense counsel in briefs and in cases as far as ordering records. And I think I even wrote down something about my belief regarding the defense attorney, you know, just kind of walked away. None of that is before this court. This court decides cases based on the record before it. And while the judicial notice aspect in this brief that's written on by defense counsel is interesting, the Watkins case that came out this year from the Court of Criminal Appeals pretty much says that this court only has discretion or has discretion as opposed to mandatory judicial notice. So this court would have to overrule its own case in Penix and then a couple other cases from the Court of Criminal Appeals in order to consider a lot of this outside the record information. What is the point of error here? The point of error is, was this defendant subject to ineffective assistance of counsel because he was denied a meaningful appeal because there was no record? And if you were to take Mr. Mowla's argument to the bank, and we, from what he was saying, every single case, every single plea of true, every single guilty plea, every single routine case that any trial judge hears requires a transcript, part of the record. There are two components to the record, the clerk's and the reporter's record, and it would require a transcript. That is not the law. In fact, our rules of appellate procedure have a rule for waiving a record. And his argument, if taken to the bank, would mean that we would not allow defense counsel to waive a record. So in this situation, we have no record. We have the Strickland case, because this is an ineffective assistance point. This court used some language in its opinion that I've discussed on ineffective assistance that said if there is some plausible argument that this court can make basically, you're only limited by your imagination, which I'm assuming is pretty unlimited. If there's some plausible argument for not asking for a record, then you must assign a strategic motivation to that. Well, gosh, we have three allegations on a petition to proceed to adjudication, which is pretty much routine on its own. Those include failure to report, and as Mr. Malice said, another claim that was hard to beat. In other words, yes, an appeal from this would be an exercise in futility, and so that is the strategic motivation that this court must ascribe to the fact that there is no transcript, part of the record, before it. And I'm going to rely on a case that I did not cite, but in hearing the argument of counsel and the very first statements going outside the record, and in 5 years of experience, you've never heard of a case where there was no transcript. Well, I hate to confess that in over two decades of experience, I've seen, I can't even think of the word, my daughter would say gazillions of cases where there was no transcript. And that's because it's a routine matter and the parties waive it at trial. So in that instance, it is futile to proceed, and we did not need a record, and you ascribe that motivation to the defense counsel. Now, this could be fleshed out properly in a writ of habeas corpus, and that would be the proceeding to have that answered here. So, and clearly, it sounds like Mr. Mallow was forced into an appeal that he perhaps didn't request. It's kind of one of those be careful what you ask for things, but I'm responding to the point of error before this court, and Strickland is very clear, and the legion of cases that follow Strickland is very clear as well. Therefore, we ask that this be affirmed. And happy Thanksgiving, Your Honors.
Thank you, Ms. Dahomey. Mr. Malla?
Very briefly, Your Honor.
I'm just kind of curious, once he pled true, where are you going with the record?
Well, Your Honor, after my client pled true, it became a punishment hearing, and I believe he had a right to, unless it was waived, I don't see where he did waive it, I believe he had a right to a record of the punishment hearing to see if Mr. Baker presented any punishment evidence. Because otherwise, the state's recommendation in this case, Your Honors, was 8 years to my client. Mm-hmm. He received 10 years from Judge Gill. Mm-hmm. So if you just take – now, I recently lost a case in Dallas where my client was offered 40 years. The judge gave him 25 years. And the court considered it was close because the trial attorney – admitted he did nothing. He even wrote in an affidavit, I didn't do anything because I was from El Paso, the case was in Dallas, I just didn't have time to prepare for the case. But the trial court recommended that relief be denied because my client got less years from the court than the state's recommendation of 40 years. And, you know, the state discussed the judicial notice. First off, the court granted judicial notice of those documents, and the case that the state correctly cited in Watkins pertained to a newspaper article. Newspaper articles under Rule 201B of the Rules of Evidence, that's not a document that is indisputable. The documents I've attached were documents that were filed with a court or orders of the court. And again, you know, I just believe that, and you know, that the state also mentioned gazillions of cases. Those cases generally pertain to situations where it was an agreed judgment. The judgment was not agreed in this case, Your Honors. My client pleaded true, but then he asked Judge Gill to determine to consider the evidence that he thought his attorney was going to present and then make a determination. We don't know what evidence he presented. We have no idea, and Judge Gill gave my client more years than the state's original recommendation. And that's it. I just ask that the court consider that. Again, there is no record, so you all don't have anything to read in this case, but I just ask the court to consider the arguments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mallon. Ms. Dahomey, we appreciate your arguments and your briefing today. Your case is submitted. We will take a short recess, and then we'll return for the fourth case on our docket, which is In the Interest of J.B.